Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. That is www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to Between the Beltways, a political podcast series from the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Each month, your hosts, Dr. Deepan Chatterjee and Dr. Shreyasi Deb, will explore the races that will shape the central Maryland counties of Howard, Montgomery, and Prince George's in the upcoming midterm elections.
Welcome to the fourth episode of Between the Beltways. Our guest today is Greg Jennings, who is running for county council from District 3 in Howard County. So in national news, President Trump still continues to deal with multiple scandals and legal battles involving Stormy Daniels, the Russia collusion probe by the special counsel, and a lot of other stuff. Democrats are leading in the generic ballot by about 5 points, according to the latest poll of polls, which is not good enough for them to take over the House majority in the midterms. They need to lead by at least 8 to 9 points for them to do that. So that's some bad news for the Democrats this week. Also, they are looking vulnerable in the Senate, where a lot of vulnerable red state Democrats are up for re-election. According to the Cook Political Report, some of the most competitive Senate races for Dems include Bill Nelson of Florida, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, and Joe Manchin of West Virginia. So these are states where Trump won in 2016 by at least 20 points or more. Current toss-ups among Republicans include Jeff Flake, who is retiring in Arizona, Dean Heller in Nevada, which is actually a seat that the Democrats are raring to pick up. Dean Heller is actually behind in the polls right now, and Bob Corker, who is also retiring in Tennessee. So even if the Democrats pick up these three seats, they're still going to be facing a lot of battle in the Senate. And they really need to, in my opinion, concentrate on the House. So if they want to win over at least one legislative branch from the Republicans.
So Deepan, I think one thing that makes the scenario that you were discussing in U.S. Senate quite complicated for the Democrats is that although they continue to lead Republicans in fundraising, they are defending 25 seats, 10 of which that you were talking about are in states that Trump won bigly in 2016, while Republicans are defending only 9 seats in the U.S. Senate. One of the senators that you mentioned is Missouri Democrat Claire McCaskill, who is seeking a third term in a state President Trump won by 19 points. And she raised gingerly well. She raised nearly $3 million in the last quarter of 2017 and started this year with more than $9 million in cash at hand. She's currently tied in the polls, though, with Josh Hawley on an average of polls taken within the past month. The other Senate race that's going to be really hot is Joe Manchin defending his West Virginia U.S. Senate seat. The primary was held this past week on May 6th, which was a bit reminiscent of the 2016 presidential primaries in both colorful language and controversial statements. The Republicans in this primary were coal baron Don Blankenship, who has served a prison sentence for violating mine standards, current West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, and U.S. Representative Evan Jenkins. This turned out to be quite an ugly primary, with Blankenship being the most controversial, with his racist ads admonishing Mitch McConnell, who's the majority leader in the Senate, of course a Republican, and his wife, the current Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. The results on Tuesday night were in favor of Patrick Morrissey, who easily defeated his rivals. Morrissey and his wife are well known in Washington, D.C., having worked as lobbyists for a very long time. The other primaries of the night were in Indiana, where Mike Braun won the Republican primary to face Democrat Senator Joe Donnelly. He's one of the most vulnerable Democrats defending his seat this fall. In Ohio, Jim Renacci won the Republican primary to face U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown is doing pretty well in polls and is expected to win this fall. Ohio, just like our home state of Maryland, will have a gubernatorial election as well this year. The Democratic winner from Tuesday night is Richard Cordray. He's Senator Liz Warren's protege and former head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, while the Republican candidate is Mike DeWine.
So Shreyasi, what do you think the Democrats need to do in order to get their message across and clear to the public, because increasingly looks like they are behind in the Senate, and this latest poll of polls is also indicating that the Republicans are inching closer to them, even in the House races.
Yeah.
So what do you think the Democrats need to do?
Yes, I was really looking forward to having a clear message. I know all politics is local, but Democrats need to have a very clear strategic vision as to what they're going to do should they win over the U.S. House of Representatives. One thing, given the fact that I work in health policy, is that all the changes that were made to the Affordable Care Act, we know that last year, all through last year, U.S. Congress tried to repeal the law, what is commonly known as Obamacare, officially known as the Affordable Care Act. They couldn't do the repeal and replace, but they tried to take away some of the underpinnings in various ways, a little bit in the omnibus, a little bit through executive action. And much of that has been weakened in the tax bill. So the premiums are skyrocketing. We need some solution immediately because that's going to hurt the voters' pocketbooks and will come back to haunt all who are running for elected office. Bottom line, Democrats need a very good and strong message.
I agree with you there, because I don't see that message coming from the Democrats. I also don't see a lot of fight, honestly. There's a lot of scandals going on right now with the president, with other Republicans, but I don't see a lot of Democrats really, first of all, talking about their message and then defending their message. Also, really fighting back against Republican attacks against their major leaders. So, with that said, as we have mentioned in a previous episode, the Maryland gubernatorial election primary is really crowded on the Democratic side this year. We have PG County Executive Rashaan Baker, who's leading in the polls right now among the Democrats. And in the matchup against Governor Hogan, he's still behind by about 7 to 15 points. Governor Hogan continues to be the most popular governor in the country, according to the polls, given his efforts to reach across the aisle and to be more bipartisan than a traditional right-wing Republican is. On a very sad note, there is a death to report. Kevin Kamenetz, who's the current Baltimore County executive, and also a gubernatorial candidate from the Democratic side, passed away last week. And his career spanned over four decades of public service. He was highly regarded by both Republicans and Democrats. So that's a sad and unfortunate incident that happened.
Yes, this was a very sudden death. And I think Maryland Democrats and Republicans are coming to terms with this news. Of course, his opponents in the Democratic primary, they are coming to terms with this news. I don't think much will get achieved in terms of policy making at the federal level in the next few months. This is, of course, the election year. Midterms are looming. The U.S. Congress is tackling opioid-related legislation. There are a number of legislations, proposed legislations, that are doing their rounds both on the House side and the Senate side. Earlier, the deadline to pass something was set around Memorial Day, but we are hearing that now Congress is looking more at the July 4th holidays to pass some legislation around the opioid epidemic. Also, there is some bipartisan legislation getting passed on new grant programs and higher appropriations on the opioid control, more flexibility for NIH and FDA. And there could be big tweaks to the Medicare and Medicaid programs related to opioids, but we will see.
So, even though a lot of legislation is not getting passed and it looks like not a whole lot is going to get done, there's still a lot of stuff that the Republicans are doing. They're trying to ram through a lot of the district court judges across the country without much debate. And the Democrats are really not really putting up a front against it, even though when they were in charge in the Senate, they were given a very hard time by Republicans, especially Mitch McConnell, who blocked the appointment of a Supreme Court judge that Obama had appointed. And so it's very interesting to see that now that the tables are flipped, the Republicans are trying to push through their advantage, but the Democrats are just sitting back, it seems like, and letting them do it. And, you know, I have some issues with that.
Between the Beltways will return after a short break.
The Gaithersburg Book Festival, a celebration of the written word and its power to enrich the human experience, is coming May 19th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the grounds of Gaithersburg City Hall. Its mission? To foster an interest in reading, writing, and literary conversation. Since its inception in 2010, the festival has quickly become one of the nation's top literary events, attracting hundreds of award-winning and best-selling authors, poets, and songwriters from across the country to its quaint park-like setting in the heart of Old Town Gaithersburg. Parking and admission are free, and AS21 staff and creatives will be on hand for the festivities. For more information and a complete list of participating authors at the Gaithersburg Book Festival on May 19th, visit gaithersburgbookfestival.org.
Welcome back to episode 4 of Between the Beltways. Our guest today is Greg Jennings, who is running for Howard County Council District 3, which includes the southeastern portion of Howard County, that is Jessup, North Laurel, Savage, Guilford, and the villages of King's Contrivance and Owen Brown in Columbia. Greg currently works as a prosecutor in the Juvenile Justice Division in Baltimore City. He has been committed to public service throughout his life, having worked on childcare policy as a volunteer in the Clinton-Gore White House, served as a judicial intern with Chief Judge Robert Bell, and as a staffer in Annapolis. He's a Democrat and has been heavily involved in campus leadership as well as the Maryland and Howard County Democratic Party organizations. Greg Jennings is a graduate of the University of Maryland College Park, Catholic University Columbus School of Law, and the University of Maryland Carey School of Law. Welcome, Greg, and congratulations.
Yes, we were talking just before the show started. I have a brand new baby, Jillian Blake Jennings. She's about 40 some odd days old today.
Wow.
And of course, we had a forum today, and she wanted to give me some notes on my stump speech at 2 a.m. last night. So I'm a little tired, but otherwise very good. And thank you for that wonderful introduction. I couldn't have done it better myself. And again, thank you guys for having me on the show. I'm very excited to have a discussion.
Sure, we are very excited to have you as well.
Yeah, thanks. That sounds very exciting that you're in the race and you're a new dad, and we can tell how that's going with 2 a.m. stump speeches. So what are your priorities in this race?
So I think in terms of the, and there's three that I usually talk about the most. The first is childcare. We in Howard County pay the second most, we have the second highest relative to any other county in the state. Mm-hmm. Only Montgomery County is higher. The cost to send my daughter to childcare is more than it cost me to go for a year at the University of Maryland when I went to college. Mm-hmm. So the burden on working families and the burden on new parents is very great. And I'm very excited the state took some action to increase the subsidy, but there's a lot more that we need to do, not just to find it ways to make it more affordable, but also to make it more accessible. Because there are a lot of people, because the price of childcare is so high in Howard mm-hmm. County, they drive to Baltimore City or Baltimore County or Prince George's or Anne Arundel, one of the neighboring areas, to get their childcare on their way to work rather than being able to have their kid here in a childcare facility in Howard County, making it a little bit easier on them and on their families. So that's issue number one. I've been working on childcare, like I said, since I was a volunteer in the Clinton Gore White House way back when I was 18, was mm-hmm. even more baby-faced than I am today.
Yeah, I was going to say, you look about 19 now. I'm just kidding.
The issue that I'm very passionate about, I think it's one of those quality of life issues. When you compare, say, the United States to, say, what they do in Quebec, where childcare is state-subsidized and it's like mm-hmm. $5 a day,
right?
In the United States are lagging behind the support that working families need. So that's issue number one. Issue number two, and by the way, feel free to, if you have questions on any of these priorities, issue number two is, of course, education. People move to Howard County for the schools. They mm-hmm. move right. here because this is the type of place where you want to raise your children. And we know that we have some problems in our school systems. We know, first and foremost, that we need more schools. School construction, especially in the eastern portion of the county, mm-hmm. where we have schools that are 120-130% capacity, we need to build more schools, and that long-term development is really important. And we also need to do more to help retain and attract the best teachers, and we need to look at our teacher salaries and make sure that they are competitive and do what we can there. The third issue that I usually talk about is affordable housing. For people in Howard County, it is very pricey to live here. Mm-hmm. And we do not have enough affordable housing. One of the things that I always find really interesting, and they do it in, I think it's USA Today or Baltimore Sun, they do a study of how much you would have to make to live in a
yes.
particular state.
I did see that.
Yes, yeah.
The amount, Maryland likely was fifth, fourth mm-hmm. or fifth in the last study. It was about $24.52.
Right.
We know that people working 40 hours a week at a minimum wage job can't make that. Even a little above the minimum wage, you can't make that. Mm-hmm. We have to find ways to create more affordable housing here in Howard County. So those are three of the things. And especially, I would also add just a little bit with affordable housing, seniors. Seniors say, you know, I've lived in this community 30 years, 40 years. Some of them are like, I was a pioneer. I moved and helped start Columbia. And now that I'm getting older in life, I need a smaller house. I need somewhere where I can live and something that's a little bit more affordable. And I just can't find it here in Howard County. And this is where my mosque is, my synagogue is, my fraternity, my civic association, all the mm-hmm. things that I have enriched my life with and I have been able to enrich the community with, all of those are here, but the housing options aren't. And so we have to do a serious look on fixing those. So those are three of the things. I also love talking about getting special interest out of politics, increasing the minimum wage, and doing more to sort of help with our first responders and public safety. But as you can tell, I'm a policy wonk. I love the details of policy.
Mm-hmm.
So I will pretty much, you know, give you an RA on everything that you can bring up. So those are three of the reasons I'm running.
So who are your primary challengers, the primary that's coming up in June?
So we have three other Democrats running, and we also have an independent who's in the process of filing. Their last names are Hunt, Hogdu, Rigby, and Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Look, with regards to the Democrats, I have nothing bad to say about any of them. So far, we're all very congenial. You know, mm-hmm. we see each other at all of these forums.
Right.
We see each
yeah.
other at all these events. And it's a fraternity. I mean, we are all doing something that is a sort of a unique thing. We're all stepping forward and saying, I want to do the best for my community. And I always respect people who are willing to step up and do that regardless of party, regardless of if they're running against me. Public service matters, and we don't do enough to praise it. With regards to the race, if I will toot my own horn a little bit, I bring a little tooting of my own horn.
Sure.
I bring sort of a unique set of skills. Mm-hmm. As a legislative in Annapolis, I have worked to help shepherd legislation through. My boss had been the lead of the two of them on over 70 pieces of legislation. So I've worked on testimony, you know, drafting amendments, all the things that really make the legislative process work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've worked on things from reducing lead in Baltimore City to stopping companies that had a record of being tax cheats and labor violators from getting state contracts, to the death penalty repeal. I've had opportunities to work on those, and I've benefited from the experience of having that legislative background. I'm also a prosecutor. We have not had somebody with law enforcement experience on the Howard County Council in quite some time. And I'm somebody that sort of knows how public safety, how prosecutions, how crime works, because I'm exposed to it in Baltimore City, and I see some of the consequences to both victim and defendant, and what we can do to help improve our criminal justice system, have meaningful reform. I think I can be a part of that here in Howard County. So those would be, to sort of differentiate myself from the field, two things that I think I bring that other people in the race do not.
So picking on some of your issues and priorities in this race, our county, as we discussed, is one of the richest and has a great public education system, but it's also right in the middle of DC and Baltimore metro areas. So we cover sort of both, and there are so many commuters. How do you plan to improve congestion, which is growing by the hour on Howard County roads and highways?
It's an extremely tough question. And I know that many people moved to Howard County from Montgomery County or Prince George's County because they wanted a smaller commute, because they wanted to be out of that type of congestion. And we can all see what's happened in Northern Virginia in terms of the damage that poor transportation planning has done. So I think probably one of the things I like to ask people when I'm talking about transportation policy is, do you have any appliances from the 1960s? Do you have any furniture from the 1960s? You know, what do you still have from the 1960s? And most people are like, I don't have almost anything. That's 50, plus years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the infrastructure system that the United States is built on in terms of the highway system is all policies that were decided mostly by Dwight Eisenhower. I mean, that's where a lot of the interstate commutes, that's where the sort of commuter mentality was created, is during the 1960s. We have to change the way we look at transit. We have to create communities that are walkable. We have to take communities that are bikeable. You know, the idea that you can drive to everything in your life, that unfortunately is not something that we're going to be able to sustain in the future. We have to think about making communities more walkable and bikeable, because our population relative to where it was in the 1960s is exponentially higher. There are more motorists on the road than there was when we put this system together. And so as much as it pains me to tell people this, there is no way we can go back to your commute in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way we can go back to that period of time because there are too many people in our community. But what we do know is that if we build walkable, sustainable communities with mass transit, that it is better for greenhouse gas emission, that it makes you healthier, and that it helps build the sense of camaraderie that I think is lost. When you walk to the grocery store and see two or three people you know from one of your local clubs or just on your neighborhood block, there's a feeling of camaraderie that develops that I don't think happens when you drive 20 or 30 minutes away to a grocery store or drive further down. We need to make Howard County walkable and bikeable, but also we need a mass transit system, because when you look at Howard County, we need to attract the next generation of millennials. And when they were doing the bidding for the Amazon contract, one of the reasons Howard County didn't end up getting is because we don't have the type of places that millennials want to live. Because when you have high student loan debt, when you are trying to get started, and there's low wage job opportunities that won't really sustain you, a lot of times you want to set aside buying that first car and you want to live somewhere where you not have to pay that expense. And so there are a lot of people that need mass transit, and we do not yet have a sort of sustainable network of mass transit. So to answer your question, look, obviously, we are going to need to build roads in the short term to ease congestion. There's no doubt that there's some short-term solutions that we can do to make things easier. I'm glad, for example, in the downtown redevelopment, they expedited the 29, the on-ramps and off-ramps for 29 to make it a little easier to commute there. There are other places in the county where we are going to build new roads. But our long-term plan has to be around mass transit, around walkability and bikeability.
All right. Mm-hmm. So what are the main issues in your district? We talked a little bit about some of the issues that are important to you. We touched on housing, schools, infrastructure. So what are some of the major issues in your particular district, in District 3, that are important?
That's an excellent question. So one of the issues that is sort of unique to District 3, we have a large portion of Route 1. And if you drive Route 1 down towards College Park, you know, down towards the Prince George's side, you can see, you know, brand new white tablecloth dining experiences, new shopping areas, new commercial ventures being done. There's really a sort of a revitalization of Route 1 that's happening on the Prince George's side. And as you cross into the Howard County border, it kind of disappears. And we know that Route 1 can be a place for opportunity. We know that Route 1 can be redeveloped into something that will attract people. Because often people in Laurel and Jessup and Savage, they go down into Prince George's County or up into Columbia for their dining experiences, for their work opportunities. We need to bring commercial opportunities down to Route 1. And so I'm very committed to looking at ways to revitalize Route 1. Also, as we've talked about, the eastern portion of Howard County, which is my district, has some of the biggest issues with overcrowding in schools. I was obviously supporting the construction of a new school here in Howard County. I'm very excited that it'll be here in Jessup, down on Mission Road. So I'm excited about that. We need to do what we can also to build High School 14 over in Elkridge to help relieve the pressure of overcrowding in our schools. And we also need to push for the renovations of Hammond High School. They've been delayed, I believe, in terms of the capital budget for about 3 years now. It's time to sort of put those in there. So school construction, as I've talked about earlier, is a big issue, not just countywide, but also in my specific area, Route 1 revitalization. And then, as I talked about earlier, I hear very often from the seniors in our community that they want to stay in Howard County, but they can't find a place to go. So those are three of the things that I hear a lot in my particular district.
Okay. One of the issues that's taken the nation by storm, and I'm interested particularly about this because of my background as a clinical psychologist, is opioid addiction. You know, I've been following some of the statistics, and Howard County seems to have a major problem with this. Not just Howard County, but, you know, since I'm in Howard County, I'm concerned about Howard County. So do you have any policy solutions that you are proposing? I mean, and I'm not just talking about administering people Narcan or something like that.
Of course. So look, as a Baltimore City prosecutor, I am exposed daily to the cost of addiction, not just for the people who are there for drug possession cases, but also for the families that are hurt by the people, because I do juvenile justice. I see sometimes it's the kids that are having the addiction problem, sometimes it's the parents.
Right.
It's a serious epidemic, and it stretches and touches so many lives. And so it's something we really do need to change. With regards to it, I am very pleased by the county's action with regards to distribution of Narcan and the offering of training that county employees could freely leave to get training on how to use Narcan, that it would be an excused absence from work. I do want to expand upon those training opportunities and increase the ability and access to Narcan, because we know it saves so many lives in dealing with the opioid addiction. With regards to it, and I talked very briefly about sort of criminal justice reform, I have seen a great deal of success in Baltimore City with regards to drug courts, processes where it has sort of elements of mediations, elements of treatment. It's a far less adversarial process than traditional courts. I do think we need to look at expanding those here in Howard County. And then lastly, I think we need to do a better job statewide, probably nationally as well, in educating our physicians about the cost of the opioid epidemic and how they should think about the distribution of pain medication. And I think it's something that I would advocate for on the state level, and something that I hope that we can also have solutions nationally. But here in Howard County, like I said, increasing the distribution of Narcan, expanding the opportunities for the drug court. And also, I think if I would say one more thing, is helping people, you know, training in the communities for people to identify the early warning signs. Because I think a lot of times the sooner you catch it, and my mother has a master's in psychology, my sister-in-law is a psychologist, what I have always heard from them is that, you know, the sooner you can begin the treatment process, the better it is for almost any disorder we're talking about, but particularly with addiction.
So you're vicariously a psychologist.
I wouldn't go so far as to say I'm vicariously a psychologist. Although I think all of us, you know, in terms of human interaction, spend a great deal of time wondering about the psyches of others and thinking about, you know, what is somebody thinking? I've always had a great deal of interest in the subject matter.
All right. Great. So we are going to end with a rapid fire round where we just ask you a few quick questions, you know, short answers. Since you're a Maryland native, what is your favorite thing about Maryland?
Well, just to be fair, I'm actually not a Maryland
native.
You're not?
Okay.
I was born in the Philippines. My dad
That's breaking news.
But I am, in terms of the things I am most proud of our state, I'm a big Orioles fan.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Cardinals and Orioles are the two baseball teams I love. So,
all right.
I'll try to be more rapid fire next one.
That's okay.
Who are your heroes?
I am a huge fan of Robert Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
His life, his work, his passion. A Ripple of Hope is one of my favorite speeches, and the way that he reached out and tried to communicate in such a divided times. Again, I'm doing terrible at the rapid fire thing, but Robert Kennedy would be one of my heroes.
I think you're doing very well, because I completely am agreeing with you, because I think he's the president that this country deserved but never got.
Yeah.
And some of his public policy platforms so many years back, we haven't yet gotten there, like eradication of poverty.
Yeah, no, my family, my father's side was Catholic. Mm-hmm. And so they were very inspired by the Kennedys. It's one of the reasons my father got into public service. Because I think it's really, there's a photo of a young African-American boy touching Barack Obama's head.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
What that photo means. And so for my father, the Kennedys running was very much similar in that way of seeing somebody like me could be president. And
right.
Somebody like me belongs in America. It's a very powerful time in terms of what representation means. So,
absolutely.
All right, next rapid fire question.
Which is not going rapidly.
What is your favorite food?
Pizza. Yeah. That's an easy one.
That's easy. Anything you would like our listeners to know about you that we haven't talked about already?
Oh, that's a fun one. Let's see. So I guess my interesting nerdy trivia. So for those of you, I remember the last presidential race, there was a lot of talk about how Ted Cruz was a debater and ran for president of his debate association. I actually was president of that debate association, that Ted Cruz, different years, but I sort of won where Ted Cruz failed. I'm an American Parliamentary Debate Association president.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had the wonderful opportunity to go and represent the United States in South Africa and in Ireland. As a competitor, and I'm a world debate quarterfinalist. So that's my nerdy trivia about me.
So your opponents should be very careful when they meet you on the stage.
Well, they're all very good. They're all wonderful.
Yes.
Like I said, it's been a real pleasure running. As much as we're against each other, we are running for the values of the Democratic Party. We are running for making Howard County better, and we are running because we all have ideas. And so I always like to think of it that way. It's a little different than a real debate in terms of, you know, you can't go after people in the same way. It's a different conversation, and it's a very pleasant conversation. I like the way all of us have been running the race so far.
Yeah, I used to debate in high school, so I'm part of it.
Are you an LD guy or a...
No, I this is in India. So our school was very well known for a lot of the extracurricular activities like debating, elocution, poetry and things like that. So I dabbled in all those. I never went to the competed at a world level, but that's great to know about you. Well, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thanks so much, Greg, and good luck with your new role at home and with the race too.
I need all the help I can get at home. I will admit that, but it is a wonderful journey. She is a fascinating little individual, and I am very excited to learn and help make her into who she's going to be. So thank you guys for having me. Hopefully we'll get to do this again after the primary. So
sure. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been Between the Beltways, a production of the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Find it each month on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.aois21.com. Keep up with the news between episodes on our Facebook at facebook.com/BTBeltways, on Twitter at BTBeltways, and on our WordPress blog, betweenthebeltways.wordpress.com.
Copyright 2018, AOS 21 Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
AOS 21 Media. What do you want your story to be?